Montero Consulting welcomes you to the Anywhere Office with Phil and Jason Montero. In the next hour, Phil and Jason take a big picture approach to the philosophies and strategies of navigating today's digital lifestyle. Turn up your speakers and don't click that mouse. Here are your hosts, Phil and Jason Montero.
Hey, Phil Montero here.
And Jason Montero here.
And welcome to the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. And we are excited today to talk about a topic that is near and dear to us, which is work-life balance. And the title of today's show, Juggling Your Life Is Not, I repeat, Not a Circus Trick. And we're going to talk today about work-life balance, and we'll be joined at about the 2:30 mark Eastern Time, or the half-hour mark there, with Gil Gordon, telework expert and author of the book Turn It Off, which is an excellent book talking about how to escape some of the electronic leashes that some of us have put ourselves on in today's day and age.
I'd like to start out here. I think it's important with some of these things that we talk about to just unpack the term before we start. A lot of times I feel like we get so close to these issues and we talk about them so much, you kind of get these buzz phrases like work-life balance or a word like telecommuting. I'm not sure we're always talking about the same things. You can start to get so involved in talking about it that you kind of lose sight of what you're talking about on the front side. And work-life balance, I think, is not a new issue by any means, but it's certainly been getting more attention with some of these workplace changes that we've been talking about. Then when you talk about it, work-life balance, I think it's very easy to sort of see these two sides. You've got your work life, and you have your home life, your family life, your friends. And you see it as these two things, work-life balance. You want to put one on the left side. You want to put one on the right side. Maybe, you know, I tend to, you think about balance, you almost picture that scale in your head. And if you got 5 pounds on the left side, you got to put 5 pounds on the right side to get it to sort of sit in balance.
What is 5 pounds of work exactly?
It's peeling a whole bag of potatoes, I think.
Okay.
So, but you see it almost as sort of this equal thing. And in reality, when you're talking about work-life balance, it really needs to be, or it should be, something more fluid than that, sort of running together. And then what I want to picture almost is that yin-yang image, the Eastern image of the circle split in half, and it's a curved line. It's not this straight line down the middle and white on the left and black on the right. It's that curved line, and then there's a circle of each. There's a circle of white and the black. There's a circle of black and the white. And that, I think that's a more, as a two-dimensional image, that's an excellent representation of what we're talking about, is this mixed together.
That's right. And one of the things you don't get when you see that yin-yang image, and that's, there's a reason it's part of our logo for the Anywhere Office and the balance that we talk about, is because that figure is actually supposed to be moving. It's
That's
in motion.
Right. It's in motion.
And I think part of balance, at least, you know, for what we're always talking about, is that it's not always a 50-50 split. There are surges that kind of move back and forth. And maybe, you know, I think balance is a good word for it, but I know we were looking at a website by someone that we enjoy, James Arthur Ray, who's a speaker and speaks about a lot of different topics for entrepreneurs and different things. And he has a great headline on his website which says, "Balance is bogus, only harmony yields happiness and real wealth." And what he talks about there is that, you know, kind of with a scale, if you actually achieve balance, there's no movement and it's actually stagnant. There's no life to that. Whereas harmony, much the way that instruments or music presents harmony, it's really a matter of different pieces fitting together into a cohesive
whole. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, life happens in more than two dimensions. And if you try to imagine what would a yin-yang look like if it was a sphere, I think it might look more like a marble with all your work and your life and your family and your friends sort of all fluidly kind of blended, marbled through there. You know, it wouldn't just be the side-on-side type of thing.
Sure, and I think that's where we kind of, I think the phrase that we often use even a little bit more than work-life balance really is work-life integration, which is, you know, you have these multiple facets of your life, and even within work and within your personal life, there's probably a lot of elements to that, and how do you integrate those things to create a life, that a quality of life that you're happy with? I mean, how do you you integrate those so that they work together. Because I think in today's day and age, it's hard to just separate them. I think that was easier earlier on, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, where when you left work, work was left behind. But now the more global marketplace and with anywhere offices where people can take their work with them and work at home or on weekends and you have pagers and cell phones, you know, work extends often beyond the workplace or the normal work hours. And in some cases, I think a lot of people would say, oh, well, that's how it's encroaching on me. But as I often point out, you know, the same thing holds true on the other side. Because I have a laptop and a cell phone, I can take vacation time that I couldn't have taken before, as long as I can manage to fit in a little bit of work there. And so by integrating those two things, you know, that's part of the strategy I use to achieve that balance is, okay, yeah, I might spend an hour doing email, but I just went on a week of vacation, whereas before I would have been tied to the office for this.
Yeah.
You know.
I think I agree with what you're saying, but I think that, again, it's not a new issue. So I think even in when the office was the office and home was the home, and I think this is the point I'm trying to make by it's not just black on the left and white on the right. You could say that your work life and you leave it at the office because the physical work is at the office. But the stress that you carry at work and then you bring that home into your family life, that's, to me, is also your work encroaching on your life. If you've got a deadline that's hanging over your head and that's making you stressed out or it's making you irritable, and then you go home and you're trying to enjoy your weekend barbecue with your family, even if you didn't have that cell phone and that laptop, that to me is a work-life out of balance.
Sure, sure, I would agree with that.
So a lot of the tools that we talk about, I see as sort of new tools to address this existing issue, and a lot of it is a time management issue. I really believe that, and it's always been a struggle, I think, for people who do take their work life seriously and who are invested in it. And one of the things that I find fascinating is that people who do sort of make their passion their career, people who are maybe solo professionals and started their own business or are consultants in a certain field, are some of the people who have the greatest challenges with this. And I think sometimes there's this sort of ideal in our head that's like, oh, when somebody sees you and you do what you love to do, they think, oh my God, you know how lucky you are, you know how fortunate you are that you do what you love to do. And while that is true, to make that choice, to turn your career and your passion into your career,
yeah,
there are challenges that go along with that too, which is it can be hard to unplug from it. It can
sure
be hard to walk away from it. I know when I spent a number of years just playing music, and I said, I'm going to focus on this music. I love to do this, and I'm going to make it my life. The business of playing music, you couldn't even go to bed at night without thinking there's something else I could have done. There was something
sure,
that
list is never ending of things that you got. And I find that, you know, running the consulting business, there's always one more phone call that could be made, one more email, one more document to be, you know, reviewed or written or that type of thing. It is very hard to when you're running your own thing and following your passion that way, except running your own business, to unplug from that.
Yeah, and I think this brings us to a topic where there's really a number of different ways that this work-life balance issue has sort of been brought to the table, or it's been championed by different people. And it had largely, much like Chuck Wilsker, who was our guest last week, was talking about, a lot of these innovations and a lot of the acceptance of these ideas has come from the bottom up. It's people inside the organization, it's workers in the organization who are looking for more balance in their life, who are looking for more satisfaction out of their
sure
jobs, who are the ones who are promoting flexibility, who are trying to get flexible work arrangements, who are trying to get the ability to telecommute. So I think really working moms, I would say, were probably some of the first people to really start to demand from employers the flexibility
sure
to try and exercise this greater work-life balance.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, as we've mentioned, it is an age-old issue, and I think that's where a lot of it started. I think it was, you know, moms going back into the workforce or looking to after they had children and a family, and, you know, now it's work-at-home dads as well, because that's much
right
more common. But we're finding now, even some studies and things we're reading, it's not just from the bottom up. It's a lot of times it's executives that are feeling burnt out and stressed from overwork and from this 24/7 kind of world and a global economy that way. So I think they're looking for it. And I think what we've also seen is that, you know, again, this flexibility and this ability to work this way has not just become a bottom-down, but a top-down from a strategic initiative standpoint. You know, even from just gathering the best people, the best employees that you can hire, you know, being able to provide this flexibility, being able to hire people that don't necessarily have to be within an easy commute range by giving that ability to work from home opens to a much larger pool of employees. So, and the disaster recovery standpoints that we've talked about with telecommuting and flexible work. So I think for a lot of companies, they're realizing that this makes them an employer of choice and that, you know, they are literally from the managers in the HR department starting to implement this and filtering it down, not just the employees, you know, asking for this kind of a benefit.
That's because they're seeing more and more, would you say, that these work-life balance issues are important to people? They are attracting points. They are maybe second, third, fourth only to salary?
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, we'll look at some news stories and things after the break. I think they kind of feed upon that, or I guess not so much feed upon it, but prove that point. And I think, yeah, I think, you know, you'll see study after study, and you'll see lots of articles around about, you know, even just when you talk to people, you talk to most people, the benefits and the flexibility that a job provides are really more of what they're looking for these days than some of the standard things. Like, I'm not saying salary is not important, that people don't look at that. I think they clearly do. And obviously it's probably one of the overriding factors. But I think flexibility and particularly with the newer generations of people that are coming into work, they just expect that. You know, I don't think it's a question of before where it was like, oh, should I approach my job or I wonder if they'll have it. I think people are going into the workforce expecting.
And yet I wonder if with this global marketplace and with the outsourcing that's going on, if some of these work-life balance topics don't become more challenging, because now if you're competing with somebody from overseas, maybe you better be putting in that 14-hour day. And we can talk about some more of this when we come back from a break that we're going to ramble off to right now, and we'll have some in the news when we get back. Stick around. You're listening to Voice America Network.
Would you, could you on a plane? Would you, could you on a train? In an airport? Hotel room? Would you, could you on the moon?
I could do it on a plane. I can do it on a train. Yes, in an airport or hotel room. I will do it on the moon. And you can too, so don't despair. You can work from anywhere.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
Hey, welcome back to the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. And we'd like to encourage you to post comments and feedback to the show. We have a blog at theanywhereoffice.com.
Do it.
We always post, that's right.
Do it, honey.
Do it. You can sign up for email updates. We also post any of the resources, links to the resources we talk about throughout the show onto that blog, as well as some other articles and information. So come by anywhereoffice.com. And certainly let us know what you think or some other topics you might like to see us talk about on this year's show.
So let's talk about today's topic is about juggling your life is not a circus trick. And we are going to come back and do some in the news segment and talk about some stories we found in the news relating to this. And one, I just wanted to point out one topic in here. In Network World, there was an article from July of 2006, and it talks about importance of certain issues versus the satisfaction rating of certain issues in the workplace. And they interviewed a number of people, and when they were looking for a job, they asked them what was important to them in a job. And then when they talked to people who'd been in a job for a while, they talked about what aspects of their job were the most satisfying to them.
Okay. And what were the most important things when they asked them?
Well, I'll tell you, what I found the most interesting relating to this topic we're having here is that in the top five most important aspects of a job was overall compensation, so pay and the pay package, but benefits and such. Benefits package was number two. Job security, base salary, and professional development and training were the top five. There's not a single work-life balance issue in the top five in importance.
which kind of surprises me, but...
Yeah, and there was, in fact, there's only one in the top 10, and it's a topic they would call family friendliness. And to me, a lot of that is probably driven around what type of daycare programs the place has, or what type of a family support system, maybe caring for an aging parent or something like that.
Sure, sure.
But when you look at the satisfaction rating of people in jobs, a very telling thing happens, and that's that three work-life balance issues populate the top five.
Really?
Flexible work schedule, family friendliness, and proximity to home. And overall compensation, which was number one in importance, actually goes down to number 15 in job satisfaction.
Not even in the top 10 anymore.
So I thought that that was an interesting article. It was a survey that was done recently, and it just goes to show you that a lot of times I think people don't even realize how important some of these issues are to them until they're, like, into the actual process of their job and their day-to-day, and you're thinking about maybe looking for a new job or a new position, and you're thinking, man, I'd like to make some more money, and I'd like to be in a job that I know I can have for a while, and I'd like there to be growth there. And maybe we don't necessarily think about some of these, what I would call, I guess, softer benefits.
Sure.
That are the flexibility, the family friendliness, the proximity to home, maybe cutting that commute out of your day from time to time.
Yeah, I've seen studies done where they asked people what was the main thing that stopped them from going to look for work at another employer, and the statistics were overwhelming. It was that they had work-life balance and flexibility, or telecommuting benefits at the current job they were at, and that prevented them from wanting to go to work for another company, because it does. You know, like we talked about last week, too, how do you measure something, a soft skill like job satisfaction, when people don't even know that's what they're looking for sometimes until they have it?
That's right.
You know, it's one of those kind of things. And then another news article that I think we found really interesting, there was, that's more of kind of the work side of things. This is a little bit more on the health side of work-life balance, was the Mayo Clinic in, this was also June of this year, June of 06, did an article on work-life balance, talking about ways to restore harmony and reduce stress. And here they're talking about, you know, how stressful and what of a physical toll that being out of balance can kind of cause with you. And they specifically even talk about how difficult it is to concentrate on your job when you're dealing with issues in your personal life, such as aging parents, coping with marital financial problems, and just kind of feeling out of balance and the harmful effect that stress can have on you. You know, and they talk about, you know, right here about how the global economy, having a more 24-hour day because of international business, and the advances in communication technology with your ability to work from anywhere has increased some stress for a lot of people, and that they find a lot of fatigue from working overtime. Like we said, particularly people that want to work from a home office think it's going to be a great benefit, and it is a great thing. And like as we mentioned before too, that the managers always fear, oh well, people are going to not work, they're not going to work, they're not going to be doing their work, how do I know they're working? Whereas what we've often found is the problem is that people work too much because they don't have that clear separation between work and home.
Yeah, and I think that's important what you bring up there, is that a lot of times when we talk about this, we tend to focus on the fact that in the work-life balance equation, work is interfering too much with our lives. And sometimes I think what we fail to see is that if you carry these stresses around and you are over-fatigued and you're taxed by having all this communication technology at your disposal, that's creeping back into your work too, because being satisfied and finding joy in your work can really enhance your personal life, and enhancements in your personal life can really make your work life more satisfying, make you better at your job, make you an easier person to deal with.
Sure.
And if you kind of have that attitude that you enjoy what you do, that really attracts positive and productive people to you.
Sure. I mean, a happy employee is a productive employee. I think anyone would agree with that. I mean, when I'm enjoying what I'm doing, I'm throwing myself into it that much more fully, whereas if I'm strung out or stressed because of deadlines, I'm not bringing the full 100% to the table that I could be bringing. And I think most people find that. I think they'll find that that it kind of shifts what their balance is. And then that's interesting. You were talking about the personal enjoyment factor of balance, and I think you were on a website, which brings us actually to our website or resource spotlight, where we were going to mention a couple of sites here that were good. And one of them, you had found, I think, a definition that you said you really liked
for
work-life balance.
That was on a website, worklifebalance.com, easy enough to remember. And they really had some very impressive resources, a lot of good articles on there. They offer online training. There's some free demos and other stuff you can look at on there. They offer programs, leadership, work-life balance, stress management, time management, which, again, is, I think, a very important aspect of all this, is that a large part of this is a time management issue, and we need to look at these technologies as a new way to approach this time management, our time management, to take that greater flexibility. But they talk about, what this website really, what they focus on when they're defining work-life balance is talking about achievement and enjoyment. And it's, again, two of these concepts that are so fundamental that they're almost easy to overlook because they seem so simplistic. And they go on to say in this article, work-life balance is not an equal balance between two things. And it changes, sometimes day to day, sometimes month to month. What's a good balance between your work life and your family life today might be different tomorrow. What's good when you're single might change when you're married.
Sure, over the scope of your life that changes. And then, like, excuse me, certain projects might come up where work has to take the forerunner, or certain family issues if you're getting married or having a child, then suddenly those things take the forefront, and it really is a flexible or a shifting priority.
Yeah, and so what they're talking about is if you can focus on achievement and enjoyment, and the way they define it is this, it's fairly simple, meaningful, daily achievement, and enjoyment in each of your four life quadrants, work, family, friends, and self. And a lot of times when people talking about this issue, you'll see that they'll sort of, it's not just work, left, life, right. They often do it into quadrants that are defined in that sort of way, work, family, friends, self.
Yeah, they had actually a great graphic on their site, and we'll post a link to that, where they actually showed those quadrants, and they even broke up their resources and their training links into those, so you could click on community or self or work and family and get some.
Yeah, and I like the way that what they were talking about is by focusing on this daily achievement and enjoyment, you can avoid what they call the as-soon-as trap, and I think this is one that is it's a killer, you know? You're like, I will start to enjoy my life as soon as X, put your, you know, variable there.
As soon as I make this much money, or as soon as I've raised to this position, or I get my business off the ground.
Or I finish this project, or I get the boat back in the water, or whatever it is, you know, as soon as. And if you can achieve something every day in one or more of those quadrants of your life, if you can enjoy something, if you can enjoy time with your family, if you can enjoy a project that you did at work, if you can achieve something at work, if you can achieve something with a friend, set a goal and meet it, you know, the point they make is that if you could do that every day, you would have a good day.
Yep.
And if you had all those good days strung together, those good days are going to lead to a balanced life.
And I think that's, you know, I mean, something, it's a philosophy that I subscribe to, and I know you do as well, and I know we looked at it, which talks about, you know, and I laughingly refer to it as being a nowist versus a Taoist, but it literally is, it you know, that as soon as always puts that enjoyment at a future point, whereas, you know, the only time is the present. You're here now. If you're not enjoying what you're doing now, like, then you're going to constantly be waiting for that time. So it really is important to make it daily, not, oh, after this month or after this project, but to be able to sit there and say, right now, I'm enjoying this. Or take us, you know, sometimes you get so caught up in it. Sometimes it's literally just a matter of stopping, taking a deep breath, and finding enjoyment.
Yeah, I had a very good friend, Mr. David Grossman, who used to say, now's the past, now. And I think before we come back with Gil Gordon, I just want to point out that I think there is a myth that goes along with people who work from home, that they're sitting at home in their slippers and their pajamas, and they're watching television, and they're, you know, really enjoying their lives. And there can be more of a challenge than people know to that. And we'll talk with Gil about that when we come back from break.
That's right.
I don't know where I'm going, but I hope it's with you.
Hi, this is Phil Montero, founder of YouCanWorkFromAnywhere.com, and I'd like to give you some of your time back. In my 15 years mentoring virtual teams and entrepreneurs, I've found literally hundreds of quick, easy-to-understand tips, tricks, and shortcuts. In the Anywhere Office ebook series, you can get my top tips about email, laptops, home offices, Palm Pilots, and virtual teams. If you act right now, you can get all 5 tip books for the price of 4, less than the cost of a tank of gas. Just visit YouCanWorkFromAnywhere.com and click on the Products tab. Then start thinking about what you're going to do with all that free time.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 866-472-5790 or email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
Hey, welcome back to the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. We encourage you to participate. You can call in live on that number they just gave you, or you can go by our blog at theanywhereoffice.com and post your comments and feedback. We're joined by Mr. Gil Gordon, telework expert and author of a book called Turn It Off. Thanks for joining us today, Gil.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Gil, I'm particularly excited to have you on board here because you've been in this telework business and working, you know, to try and help companies and people, you know, get more work-life balance in their lives for quite some time. And I know, you know, you've always been one of my inspirations when I started doing this. You were already a household name, you know, from all the work, you know, the body of work that you've done. And one of the questions I have is, you know, you've been doing this since, I think you said, 1982.
Right.
You had worked for Johnson & Johnson for about 10 years in HR before you started consulting in this niche. What was the catalyst, or what, you know, particularly in 82, what made you decide to go and start focusing on telecommuting and telework at that point?
Well, as usually, there's a long story behind a move like that, but the short version of it is I was at a conference in the fall of 81, where this topic was just beginning to be talked about. There was a reference to what was then Alvin Toffler's new book called The Third Wave, and he had a chapter in there called The Electronic Cottage, which foretold the idea of everybody not only working at home, or many people working at home, but shopping and education and so on. And the speaker was a statistician from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Somebody in the audience made reference to that Toffler concept and basically said, what do you think as you look in your crystal ball about this idea of people working at home with computers? Now, remember, this is just around the time the IBM PC was about to come out.
Yeah.
And he stood there, and I can see him today. He kind of blew it off, shrugged his shoulders, and said, well, it might be good for a few weirdos or oddballs, but that's it. And I was just so taken with how quickly he dismissed it that I guess it was a proverbial gauntlet that he threw down. And I did some research and was convinced even way back then that it made sense, but it really needed as much attention to the human resource and people side of it as to the technology. So as my boss said at my going away party, 9 months short of being vested for my pension, and with my wife pregnant with our second child,
oh,
I flew all away and left.
Timing, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
I guess once the line in the sand gets drawn, though, there's no going back at that point.
I mean, it was a great experience being there, but I think that was inadvertently the kind of kick in the rear that I needed. And it was a very good move because it was exciting to be in sort of at the ground floor of an idea and, in a way, make it up as I go along. But, you know, there's such a long history. The history of this idea of people working at home for their employers goes back easily into the 60s when people were there with old IBM key punch machines. So it isn't as new as it seems. The tremendous growth, of course, has been based not only on the technology, which is the predictable part, but I think some major changes in values and preferences of employees and also driving forces for the employers. So all that's really come together quite nicely.
Yeah, I agree, and that's kind of some of the things we were talking about on the first half of the show. Now, you know, as we mentioned, that a lot of that technology is kind of what becomes that, what some people see as a digital chain or preventing them from getting some of this work-life balance, and you wrote an excellent book on that topic called Turn It Off. And, you know, if you could, just tell us a little bit about that book and kind of what prompted you to write it and what you were hoping to accomplish with that book.
The subtitle of the book, which is maybe one of the longest ones on record, is How to Unplug from the Anytime, Anywhere Office Without Disconnecting Your Career. And the premise of the book is quite simple. It says that we're living in the ultimate good news, bad news story. The good news is that we have all this technology that allows us to work pretty much anytime, anywhere. You know, the cell phones, the PDAs, the laptops, and all the rest. So we're not really bounded by the physical constraints of the office. And the bad news is exactly the same. So that the boundary that used to exist quite clearly between work and the rest of people's lives now has become certainly much more permeable. And for some people, has disappeared entirely. And so the book said, A, this has happened. B, here's how to take a look at your own life and decide if this is a problem for you. So I wasn't prescribing a return to the 35-hour week or saying thou shalt never work on weekends, but just saying, hey, just call time out, look in the mirror, and decide if this makes sense. And then if you did want to make a change, there was some guidance about how to begin reestablishing some of those boundaries so that you do have a chance to back away from work and all that it entails without threatening your career.
Gil, this is Jason. Let me ask you this. Do you find that, I know in a lot of these situations, this is the type of deal where somebody will say it has to get worse before it can get better. Do you think we're at the point, where would you say we are on this timeline, maybe, of how these technologies, have they decreased people's work-life balance, or are they really improving people's ability to achieve work-life balance?
It depends on who you ask, and it also depends on how much the person answering is trying to delude themselves.
Right?
All you have to do is look around at all the places where people are using their Blackberries or their laptops or their cell phones. And at first glance, you'd say, my gosh, why are they sitting here at the beach, if you will, doing work like that? And the other side of it comes from the people with the laptops saying, well, if I didn't have the ability to take this work with me, I wouldn't be able to get away with the family to the beach, which has always struck me as a very specious argument, because that never was a problem before the technology enabled it. In fact, this country has, I believe, the worst record in the developed world of the percentage of allotted vacation time that our workers actually take. We have the lowest percentage. We have the most people who bypass or don't take advantage of their allocated vacation compared to any other country, which I think is a little bit tragic. I'm not against hard work. I'm certainly not against technology, but I do think that boundary has slipped away in some ways. And what I always find effective is that it may not only be a question of work-life balance, but as some people prefer to call it, work-life integration. So that there's nothing inherently wrong with working at night or on the weekends or even on vacation if you choose to. The problem is when that which is possible becomes the norm, becomes expected, to the point where people going on vacation, in many cases, are not only urged or encouraged, but actually expected to check their voicemail and email and be accessible. And I'm just not sure that makes as much sense as it seems to the
employer. This is a topic that's frustrated me for some time, in that, back before there was a fax machine, if it took me 3 days to get you to a document, that seemed to be fine.
Right.
And then now that I can email it or fax it to you and you can have it in 30 seconds, well, most people want it in 15 seconds.
That's right. It never ends. And of course, what happens there, it began with the fax machine. I think it then moved on to the overnight services like FedEx and then certainly email and the rest of it. We confuse the speed of transmission with the need for speed of action.
Yeah.
And they're not always the same. I mean, we're not all neurosurgeons here where there are life and death decisions in the balance here. I think there are two negative, or actually maybe three negatives that come out of this. One is what we were talking about in terms of the way that this maybe impinges on people's time to get a break. The second is that I think it causes many people to lose the ability or not even develop the ability to make some informed decisions about what really is important. There's a process of equating urgency with value, and they're not always the same. And just because you can get that document faxed or emailed when you're on top of a mountain somewhere doesn't really mean that there's a consequence to dealing with it right then. The third, and I think the most problematic point from the employer's point of view, is that when you talk about this issue of people working on vacations, I'm not looking at that as a bleeding heart humanistic view, but from a purely selfish corporate standpoint, saying that the person who goes on vacation and then comes back more tired and less rested and recharged than when he or she left is of less value than beforehand. So in this age of all the downsizing, all the do more with less, all of that stuff, when we take our valuable people and don't give them a chance to unwind and recharge mentally and physically, all in the name of staying in touch, I think we're really, as the saying goes, sort of eating our seed corn. And I think this is really beginning to haunt and going to come back to bite a lot of employers.
I think you're right, because I think, you know, what we're realizing, particularly in an information society like this, is that your people are your strongest resource, and if you're depleting that resource, you wouldn't use any other resource or abuse it in that way, but often I think we don't see that. And I think what you're bringing up there is also is a matter of taking a look at it and making a conscious choice, which is what I think kind of what your book walks you through, which is what I liked about it, and you had a couple of little charts there and kind of where you would really look at your work and your life, and you would plot it out and make a conscious choice about that. And like you said, you know, for a lot of people, they think, oh, just because I can get it that fast, then it must be, I should do it that fast. But it is a matter of a conscious choice there.
Right, and also, what is the consequence if I don't do it? And I make the not terribly profound observation in the book that we all have that 168 hours in the week, and instead of allowing work to creep into more and more of those hours, that there may, in fact, be a way to begin drawing some boundaries, not in a way of saying to the boss, you know, don't you dare call me after 5 o'clock on a Friday, but to begin to, as you said, make some choices and not just let this happen. I think there's another side of this too, which is that in the Stone Age, long before the laptop and the cell phone and the BlackBerry and so on, if somebody was going on vacation, the manager and the coworkers and the employee who was on vacation all planned for that. There was some cross-training that happened. There was some what-ifing about, well, you know, what if client X calls? Who's going to handle it? And what happened in the course of preparing for this person's absence is that you strengthened the organization by doing some training, different reassignments and so on. But now when the assumption is that the person is actually never out of touch, not only does he or she not get the break and come back more rested, but you diminish the bench strength of the organization because you miss that wonderful opportunity for some backup training. And I think that's another very hidden and troublesome aspect of this anytime, anywhere work.
That's another really good point, that it's something that I've never actually thought of before, which is, you know, that cross-training and that, you know, and that's one of the things I think that you often talk about, and I know we talk about too with a formal telework plan, is that by putting these things in place and by having a plan for these things, you would make sure that people were cross-trained and you would take the steps and put a strategy in place, whereas if you do it anything, particularly even just something as simple as this, on a more ad hoc basis, then the planning doesn't normally go into it and you don't reap the true benefits of what could
you
be done.
Have the situation where, by the way, this occurs in every organization, whether it's three employees or 300,000 employees, where people are making some smart decision and problem analysis. For example,
I think that's a good point, Gil. We have to. That music means we got to go to a break, but we'll pick up with that point once we come back.
We'll do.
Does your office sound like this? Or this? The choice is yours. You can work from anywhere.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
About living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work.
So again, we're back with Gil Gordon, and Gil, sorry we had to interrupt you before we went to the break, but if you want to continue, we were talking a little bit about some of the cross-training opportunities that are missed with people going on vacation and some of the points of kind of the planning that goes involved with that.
Right. Another example of that, you'll often hear a manager say, well, what if there's a call from this key client, or what if the system goes down or something? The finger in the dike solution is to make the person who knows how to solve that accessible on vacation. The better solution, I think, is to stop and say, hey, why is that client calling with that urgent question? Or why is it that we think the system is going to crash again? When you don't have the motivation to do that kind of deeper problem analysis and you live your life dealing with symptoms, then the BlackBerry and the cell phone just feed that that kind of misdirection, I think. Whereas the really disciplined smart manager will not keep looking at those stopgap solutions, and instead will say, let's try to find out what's really going on here so that maybe we minimize the number of these trouble situations that would need us to get that person off the mountaintop anyhow.
That's a good point. I think this this technology and all of this kind of ad hoc telework or flexible work often becomes a band-aid for things, even just like, you know, we mentioned before, the hurricanes were broadcasting from Florida here, and every time the hurricanes come up, suddenly everybody starts to get worried about this stuff and pay attention to it, rather than figuring out how can we make sure that this isn't an issue to begin with.
Right.
And I think that happens a lot, unfortunately.
Not to mention that they feel the need to rush to the grocery store to buy the bread they'd never eat anyhow.
That's right.
And that milk and bread, what is with that? Is everybody just eating breakfast?
Right, yeah.
There's a hurricane.
But you know, all this stuff is easy to say but hard to do. I mean, I've had my own business for about 24 years now, and it wasn't until, a good 10, maybe 15 years ago that I was able to bring myself to do what I'm talking about. I would sit there, I remember painfully many times sitting in the motel room with my wife and kids, and they're all ready to go out to wherever we're going that day, and I'm sitting there on the phone saying, you know, just two more calls.
Right.
And then finally I said, the heck with it. And what I did was two things. One was to try to do a little bit better planning to get out ahead of things so it wouldn't be last minute. I would always notify clients well in advance saying, here's my schedule. You're not going to be able to reach me. Let me know what I could do in advance. And then the hardest part was to just turn everything off and sit back and enjoy it. Now, I often wondered, you know, was that the week that the $1 million contract would have come in the door?
That's always my fear.
You know, and maybe it was, but I'll tell you, my reinforcement was that every time I do this and somebody gets my vacation message, I always get two or three emails saying, you know, congratulations, I'm glad you're doing that. I really wish I had the nerve, courage, wisdom, whatever, to do that. So that's the reinforcement that makes up for missing the contract that would put those three Porsches in my driveway.
That's a good point. Gil, I mean, like you said, you kind of looked at your own work life, and it is often that we don't practice some of the things we preach. And if you were going to give some, you know, I guess two or three concrete tips that you would give someone who's trying to establish more balance in their life, what would be those things that you would say to do or to try?
I think the first thing is, as with any other major change, you've got to start off slowly. You can't go from working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week over the course of 7 days to cutting back to a 35-hour, 5-day week. So I tell people to start with carving out, for example, maybe half of Sunday to say that you're not going to touch anything electronic until 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And just, you know, get through that, and you'll, when you find out that the world hasn't ended, then you on from there. So start off slowly. Second thing is to do the kind of problem analysis that I referred to a minute ago. Instead of worrying about how you're going to respond to those 30 emails or irate phone calls from your key coworkers or customers, stop and say, why am I getting this stream of flack and problems, and is there any way that I can maybe invest a little time in training or some other solution to make that whole thing go away. And the third thing is to enlist the aid of your significant others. You know, we never know or see ourselves as well as we're seen by others around us. And I've often heard many people say, oh, you know, I'm not overworking, I'm not spending too much time on the computer. But when they talk to their family or friends, you get a very different story. So I think it's time to, as difficult as it is, to stop and ask those people in your life, how do you look to them, and is there room for change?
Kind of a personal 360-degree review.
Yeah, and, you know, as with any kind of examination like that, it, the answer that we don't want to hear may be the one we most need to hear. I mean, I found this was in my own case, that even in the days when I'd be working at home, especially when our kids were younger, I would be down in my office, and I would, if I wasn't on dinner duty, I'd work up to sort of the last minute, come upstairs, sit down at the dinner table, and I couldn't figure out why nobody, my wife and kids, weren't involving me in the conversation. And then I realized that my body was at the table, but my brain was still down in the office. So what I did was to create a little artificial commute for myself. I would come up like a half an hour before, sit there and read the paper or talk to one of the kids or have a glass of wine or whatever, but something that created a physical separation. I mean, that's the one, maybe the only thing that is a loss by not commuting to an office. You know, as onerous as the commute is for people, it does provide that buffer.
It's a solid physical transition.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So I think we all need to find things like that, and it is often only by looking from the perspective of those around us that we see the need to do it.
Very true. Well, thanks, Gil, so much for taking the time to join us today and giving us your insight and tips for this. We really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
And Gil, how can people get in contact with you or find your site?
It's very simple. It's www.gilgordon.com.
Great.
And they can get the email through there as well.
Yep, and you can also go to turnitoff.com or go to Amazon and get that very fine book and put some more balance into your life. So thanks again, Gil, for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Great. So that about wraps it up for this week's Anywhere Office show. Next week, we have another interesting show delving into the Anywhere Office Anytime. We're calling it Work Unchained, Work Where and When You Want. And what we're going to look at is actual virtual offices themselves, and really two sides of that. There's web-based collaboration services, which make up virtual offices, and then, as ironic as this sounds, a physical virtual office. And
physical virtual office.
Physical virtual office, like jumbo shrimp. We're going to talk about what that means and how you can use some of those things.
All right. And we appreciate you joining us. We encourage you to post some feedback and comments to our blog, and we will see you the next time around. This is Jason Montero.
This is Phil Montero.
And don't forget, no matter where you go, there you are.
Montero Consulting would like to thank you for listening to The Anywhere Office. To contact Phil or Jason, visit theanywhereoffice.com. Tune in next Wednesday for another entertaining and informative hour of The Anywhere Office with Phil and Jason Montero.